This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, Penguin Random House Audio presents Star Wars: Dark Disciple by Christy Golden. Read for you by Mark Thompson. For years, the galaxy-wide conflict known as the Clone Wars has raged. The struggle between the rightful government of the Galactic Republic and the Confederacy of Independent Systems has claimed the lives of untold billions. The Force-wielding Jedi, for millennia the guardians of peace in the galaxy, have been thwarted at nearly every turn by the Separatists and their leader, the Sith Lord Count Dooku. With the war showing no signs of ending, and the casualties mounting each day, the Jedi must consider every possible means of defeating their cunning foe. Whether some means are too unthinkable, and some allies too untrustworthy, has yet to be revealed. Chapter 1. Ashu Nayamal, firstborn of Ashu, child of the planet Morani, huddled with her family in the hold of a Republic frigate. Naya and the other refugees of Morani braced themselves against the repercussions from the battle raging outside. Sharp, tufted Maran ears caught the sounds of orders, uttered and answered by clones, the same voice issuing from different throats. Keen noses scented faint whiffs of fear from the speakers. The frigate rocked from yet another blast. Some of the pups whimpered, but the adults projected calm. Rakshu cradled Naya's two younger siblings. Their little ears were flat against their skulls, and they shivered in terror against their mother's warm, lithe body. But their blue muzzles were tightly closed. No whimpers for them. A proud line was Ashu. It had given the Moran many fine warriors and wise statesmen. Naya's sister, Tigu, second-born of Ashu, had a gift for soothing any squabble. And Kamu, the youngest, was on his way to becoming a great artist. Or had been, until the Separatists had blasted Morani's capital city to rubble. The Jedi had come, in answer to the distress call, as the Moran knew they would. But they had come too late. Angry at the Morani government's refusal to cooperate, the Separatists had decided that genocide, or as close a facsimile as possible, would solve the problem of obtaining a world so rich in resources. Naya clenched her fists. If only she had a blaster. She was an excellent shot. If any of the enemy attempted to board the ship, she could be of use to the brave clones now risking their lives to protect the refugees. Better yet, Naya wished she could stab one of the Separatist scum with her stinger. Even though it would... Another blast, this one worse. The lights flickered off, replaced almost instantly by the blood-red hue of the backup lighting. The dark gray metal of the freighter's bulkhead seemed to close in ominously. Something snapped inside Naya. Before she really knew what she was doing, she had leapt to her feet and bounded across the hold to the rectangular door.
Naya!
Rakshu's voice was strained.
We were told to stay here!
Naya whirled, her eyes flashing.
I am walking the warrior path, Mother. I can't just sit here doing nothing. I have to try to help.
You will only be in the...
Rakshu's voice trailed off as Naya held her gaze. Tears slipped silently down Rakshu's muzzle, glittering in the crimson light. The Moran were no telepaths, but even so, Naya knew her mother could read her thoughts.
I can do no harm. We are lost already.
Rakshu knew it too. She nodded, then said, her voice swelling with pride in her eldest,
Step well.
Naya swallowed hard at the blunt blessing. The stinger was the birthright of the Moran, and if used, their death warrant. The venom that would drop a foe in his tracks would also travel to his slayer's heart. The two enemies always died together. The words were said to one who was not expected to return alive.
Goodbye, Mama,
Naya whispered, too softly for her mother to hear. She slammed a palm against the button and the door opened. Without pausing, she raced down the corridor, her path outlined by a strip of emergency lighting. She skidded to a halt when the hallway branched into two separate directions, picked one, and ran headlong into one of the clones.
Whoa there,
he said, not unkindly.
You're not supposed to be here, little one.
I will not die huddled in fear,
Naya snapped.
You're not going to,
the clone said, attempting to be reassuring.
We've outrun puddle jumpers like these before. Just get back to the holding area and stay out of our way. We've got this in hand.
Naya smelled the change in his sweat. He was lying. For a moment, she spared compassion for him. What had his life been like when he was a youngling? There had been no one to give him hugs or tell stories. No loving parental hands to soothe childhood's nightmares. Only brothers, identical in every way, who had been raised as clinically as he. Brothers and duty and death. Feeling strangely older than the clone, and grateful for her own unique life that was about to end, Naya smiled, shook her head, and darted past him. He did not give chase. The corridor ended in a door. Naya punched the button. The door slid open onto the cockpit, and she gasped. She had never been in space before, so she was unprepared for the sight the five-section viewport presented. Bright flashes and streaks of laser fire dueled against an incongruously peaceful-looking starfield. Naya wasn't sufficiently knowledgeable to be able to distinguish one ship from another, except for her own planet's vessels, looking old and small and desperate as they tried to flee with their precious cargo of families just like her own. A clone and the Jedi General, the squat reptilian Alina, who had led the mission to rescue Naya's people, occupied the cockpit's two chairs. With no warning, another blast rocked the ship. Naya went sprawling into the back of the clone's chair, causing him to lurch forward. He turned to her, his eyes dark with anger, and snapped,
Get off this!
General Chubor,
came a smooth voice. Naya's fur lifted. She whirled, snarling silently. Oh, she knew that voice. The Moran had heard it uttering all sorts of pretty lies and promises that were never intended to be kept. She wondered if there was anyone left in the galaxy who didn't recognize the silky tones of Count Dooku. He appeared on a small screen near the top of the main viewport. A satisfied, cruel smirk twisted Dooku's patrician features.
I'm surprised you contacted me. As I recall, Jedi prefer to be regarded as the strong, silent type.
The clone lifted a finger to his lips, but the warning was unnecessary. Naya's sharp teeth were clenched, her fur bristled, and her entire being was focused on the Count's loathed face. But she knew better than to speak. General Chubor, sitting beside the clone in the pilot's chair, so short that his feet did not reach the floor, likewise was not baited.
You've got your victory, Dooku.
His slightly nasal, high-pitched voice was heavy with sorrow.
The planet is yours. Let us have the people. We have entire families aboard, many of whom are injured. Their innocence.
Dooku chuckled, as if Chubor had said something dreadfully amusing over a nice hot cup of tea.
My dear General Chubor, You should know by now that in a war, there is no such thing as an innocent.
Count, I repeat. Our passengers are civilian families.
General Chubor continued, with a calmness at which Naya could only marvel.
Half of the refugees are younglings. Permit them at least to...
Younglings whose parents unwisely chose to ally with the Republic.
Gone was Dooku's civilized purr. His gaze settled on Naya. She didn't flinch from his scrutiny, but she couldn't stifle a soft growl. He looked her up and down, then dismissed her as of no further interest.
I've been monitoring your transmissions, General. And I know that this little chat is being sent to the Jedi Council. So let me make one thing perfectly clear.
Dooku's voice was now hard and flat, as cold and pitiless as the ice of Morani's polar caps.
As long as the Republic resists me, innocents will continue to die. Every death in this war lies firmly at the feet of the Jedi. And now, it is time for you and your passengers to join the ranks of the fallen.
One of the largest Morani ships bloomed silently into a flower of yellow and red that disintegrated into pieces of rubble. Naya didn't know she had screamed until she realized her throat was raw. Chubor whirled in his chair, his large-eyed gaze locked with hers. The last thing Ashu Nayamaw, firstborn of Ashu, would ever see was the shattered expression of despair in the Jedi's eyes. The bleakest part about being a Jedi, thought Master Obi-Wan Kenobi, is when we fail. He had borne witness to scenes like the one unfolding before the Jedi Council far too many times to count. And yet the pain didn't lessen. He hoped it never would. The terrified final moments of thousands of lives played out before them. Then the grim holographic recording flickered and vanished. For a moment there was a heavy silence. The Jedi cultivated a practice of non-attachment, which had always served them well. Few understood, though, that while specific individual bonds, such as romantic love or family, were forbidden, the Jedi were not ashamed of compassion. All lives were precious. And when so many were lost in such a way, the Jedi felt the pain of it in the Force, as well as in their own hearts. At last, Master Yoda, the diminutive but extraordinarily powerful head of the Jedi Council, sighed deeply.
"Grieved are we all, to see so many suffer," he said. "Courage the youngling had at the end. Forgotten, she and her people will not be."
"I hope her bravery brought her comfort," Kenobi said. "The Moran prize it. She and the others are one with the Force now. But I've no more earnest wish than that this tragedy be the last the war demands."
"As do all of us, Master Kenobi," said Master Mace Windu. "But I don't think that wish is coming true anytime soon."
"Did any ships make it out with their passengers?" Anakin Skywalker asked. Kenobi had asked the younger man, still only a Jedi Knight, to accompany him to this gathering, and Anakin stood behind Kenobi's chair.
"Reported in, no one has,"
Yoda said quietly.
"But hope, always, there is."
"With respect, Master Yoda," Anakin said, "the Moran needed more than our hope. They needed our help, and what we were able to give them wasn't enough."
"And unfortunately, they are not the only ones we've been forced to give short shrift," Windu said.
"For almost 3 standard years, this war has raged,"
said Plo Koon, the Keldor member of the Council. His voice was muffled due to the mask he wore over his mouth and nose, a requirement for his species in this atmosphere.
"We can barely even count the numbers of the fallen, but this..."
He shook his head.
"All directly because of one man's ambition and evil," said Windu. It's true that Dooku is the leader of the Separatists, Kenobi said. And no one will argue that he is both ambitious and evil. But he hasn't done it alone. I agree that Dooku may be responsible for every death in this war, but he didn't actively commit each one.
Of course not. But it's interesting that you use nearly the same words as Dooku. He placed the blame for the casualties squarely upon us.
A lie, that is,
Yoda said. He waved a small hand dismissively.
Foolish it would be for us to give it a moment's credence.
Would it be truly, Master Yoda? Windu asked with a hard look on his face. As a senior member of the council, he was one of the few who dared question Master Yoda. Kenobi raised an eyebrow.
What do you mean, Master Windu?
Asked Yoda.
Have the Jedi really explored every option? Could we have ended this war sooner? Could we, in fact, end it right now?
Something prickled at the back of Kenobi's neck. Speak plainly, he said. Windu glanced at his fellows. He seemed to be weighing his words. Finally, he spoke.
Master Kenobi's right. Dooku couldn't have done this completely alone. Billions follow him. But I also stand by my observation that this war is Dooku's creation. Those who follow him follow him. Every player is controlled by the Count. Every conspiracy has been traced back to him.
Anakin's brow furrowed. You're not saying anything we don't already know, Master. Windu continued.
Without Dooku, the Separatist movement would collapse. There would no longer be a single seemingly invincible figurehead to rally around. Those who were left would consume themselves in a frenzy to take his place. If every river is a branch of a single mighty one, then let us dam the flow. Cut off the head, and the body will fall.
But that's what we've been...
Oh. Anakin's blue eyes widened with sudden comprehension. No, Kenobi thought. Surely Mace isn't suggesting... Yoda's ears unfurled as he sat up straighter.
Assassination, mean you?
No. Kenobi spoke before he realized he was going to, and his voice was strong and certain. Some things simply aren't within the realm of possibility. Not, he added sharply, looking at Mace, for Jedi.
Speaks the truth, Master Kenobi does. To the dark side, such actions lead.
Mace held up his hands in a calming gesture.
No one here wishes to behave like a Sith Lord.
Few do, at first. A small step, the one that determines destiny, often is.
Windu looked from Yoda to Kenobi. Then his brown-eyed gaze lingered on Kenobi.
Answer me this. How often has this council sat shaking our heads, saying everything leads back to Dooku? A few dozen times? A few hundred?
Kenobi didn't reply. Beside him, Anakin shifted his weight. The younger Jedi didn't look at Kenobi or Windu, and his lips were pressed together in a thin, unhappy line.
A definitive blow must be struck, Mace said.
He rose from his chair and closed the distance between himself and Kenobi. Mace had the height advantage, but Kenobi got to his feet calmly and met Windu's gaze.
Dooku is going to keep doing exactly what he has been,
Windu continued quietly.
He's not going to change. And if we don't change either, then the war will keep raging until this tortured galaxy is nothing but space debris and dead worlds. We, the Jedi, and the clones we command are the only ones who can stop it.
Master Windu is right, said Anakin. I think it's about time to open the floor to ideas that before we would have never considered.
Anakin, Kenobi warned.
With respect, Master Kenobi, Anakin barreled on. Morani's fall is terrible, but it's only the most recent crime Dooku has committed against a world and a people.
Mace added,
The Morans who died today already have more than enough company. Do we want to increase those numbers? One man's life must be weighed against those of potentially millions of innocents. Isn't protecting the innocent the very definition of what it means to be a Jedi? We are failing the Republic and its citizens. We must stop this now.
Kenobi turned to Yoda. The ancient Jedi Master peered at all those present, be it physically or holographically. Sacy Tin, an Iktachi Master, the Togruta Shakti, her expression calm but sorrowful. The images of Kit Fisto, Oppo Rancisis, and Depa Balaba. Kenobi was surprised to see sorrow and resignation settle over Yoda's wrinkled green face. The diminutive Jedi closed his huge eyes for a moment, then opened them.
Greatly heavy, my heart is. Then come to this, matters have, he said.
Using his cane, he rose and walked to the window. All eyes followed him. Below, Coruscant unfolded, and myriad small, personal vessels sped past, and the sun gazed down at it all as clouds drifted languidly by. Yoda extended a three-fingered hand, indicating the view.
Each life aflame in the Force is beautiful, unique, glowing and precious. It stands to bravely cast its own small light against the darkness that would consume it.
Yoda lifted his cane, pointing at a cloud that was grayer and larger than most of its fellows.
But grows, this darkness does. With each minute, the Dooku continues his attacks.
Yoda fell silent. No one interrupted as the cloud continued on its path, moving to hide the face of the sun. Its shadow leached away the vibrancy of the city beneath it, turning its gleam to dullness, its bright colors to a muted, somber palette. It was nothing more than the sun and a shadow, but nonetheless, Kenobi felt his heart lurch within his chest.
Stop him. We must,
Yoda said solemnly. He closed his eyes and bowed his head. The moment hung heavy, and it seemed everyone was loath to break it. Finally, Mace spoke.
The question before us now is, who will strike the killing blow?
Kenobi sighed and rubbed his eyes.
I may have a suggestion.
Chapter 2.
Things were going very well for Korovar merchant Sheb Vallad. Very well indeed. He had come to Otor's hub, the place to be if one dealt in certain merchandise, a standard year before the war had broken out. While others busied themselves with choosing sides, Sheb had made himself a powerful friend to both. Everybody liked trinkets, jewels, paintings, statues, fancy hookah pipes made of exotic materials and studded with gems from far distant worlds. And if the makers of such exquisite items happened to have met with unpleasant fates, well, that simply caused what they had created to become even more valuable. Most times, Sheb waited for the unpleasant fates to occur and positioned himself in a position to benefit. Sometimes, he took a more direct approach. Oh, not he himself. No, no. His hands were made for handling money and stroking valuable items. There were plenty of others willing to take his credits to do the ugly business of increasing the value of certain objects. He settled back in his chair and took a pull on his hookah, absently reaching a hand to finger the ornate carvings on the horn that jutted from his skull. A Kurovar's horn is a Kurovar's pride, his father had told him. It told the world everything it needed to know about the individual sporting it. Sheb's horn was large, twisting, and lavishly decorated. Great, late artisans had carved their work upon it, and jewels caught the dim lighting in the smoky back room of his shop.
He availed himself of one of the delicate pastries that were the specialty of his private chef, then gestured to the blue-plated protocol droid who stood at attention beside the door. Someone else stood at attention, too. The ever-reliable Thurg, a burly Gamorrean.
"Show our guest in, Blue," Sheb said.
"Of course, my most glorious master."
Sheb had sprung for a customized version of the current protocol unit. Blue came equipped with two specialized programs, Agile 8 and B Little. The former soothed Sheb, and the latter had proven vastly entertaining. Blue stepped through the curtained door into the waiting room that lay beyond while Thurg, looking slightly bored, picked at his large yellowed teeth. Sheb hoped Blue would catch him at it. The dressing down the droid would give Thurg was sure to be a delight. Though Blue probably should be grateful it was only the Gamorrean's teeth that were being picked, not the bodyguard's porcine nostrils.
"Master Tall," said the droid in his precise, clipped voice. "The most honorable, reputable, and extremely fair merchant of high-quality valuables and artifacts, Sheb Vallard, has most graciously agreed to grant your request for an audience."
"Whoa there," came Tall's cheerful voice.
Sheb took another pastry, smiling, and poured tea for his customer. Over these last couple of months, Tall had become a regular patron, and Sheb wondered what Tall's glib tongue had in store for poor Blue today.
"I see you're set on verbal overload, Blue. And I've told you, don't call me Master."
"Today's program setting will not permit me to override the designation, I fear. Master Tall."
The droid strode through the curtain, politely holding it to the side so that Tall could enter easily. Tall Carr was a tall, well-muscled Kifar specimen who moved with an easy grace. As always, his eyes sparkled with good humor above the narrow yellow tattoo that ran the width of his face. Thurg blocked his way with a grunt and stood expectantly. Tall rolled his eyes.
"Sheb, call off your bantha. I've never brought a weapon in yet."
The Gamorrean hesitated, looking back at his master, confused.
"Thurg, you know the rules."
Tall grinned at Thurg.
"Go ahead. But you know I don't have any weapons."
"I know you no have weapons,"
Thurg said in guttural basic, patting Tall down, then stepping back.
"He unarmed.
You may now enter the radiant presence of my magnificent master,"
said Blue, sweeping his arm for good measure.
"Hey, Blue," Tall said, "how many synonyms for your name are there?"
"In basic, there are..."
Tall waved a hand.
"No, no, in all your languages. And can you tell me what they are?"
A slightly choked sound emanated from the droid, and he visibly slumped. Then,
"Blue, my data banks register 40,011,742,983 accepted synonyms for the color blue. Beginning with basic, they are, in alphabetical order, AO, Aqua, Azure."
"You don't have to obey that instruction, Blue,"
Sheb said.
"Oh, thank you, my most marvelous master. I am exceedingly grateful."
Sheb indicated the platter of pastries.
"Tall, Tall," he said with a sigh. "Are you trying to short out my droid?"
"Maybe,"
said Tall, his mouth full.
"Well, if you ever succeed, I shall expect to be compensated for repairs,"
the merchant said.
"Now, wipe your hands. I've something quite remarkable for you today."
Tall obliged with the enthusiasm of a child awaiting a gift, looking expectantly at Sheb. Sheb waved one of his assistants over. The Twi'lek female carried a tray atop which sat something covered by a piece of cloth. With a flourish, Sheb unveiled the latest treasure. Tall gasped, quite satisfactorily, which did not surprise Sheb in the least. The item on the tray was millennia old, but looked as if it had left the artist's studio but a few moments past.
It was a small statuette of an aquatic creature, all memory of its species now forgotten, that had once frolicked, presumably it had frolicked, if the playful motion captured by the stone carving was to be trusted, in the oceans of a world that had been likewise lost to time. Small gems served it for eyes, and its tail curved beneath its four-flippered body to merge with a base that looked like a cresting wave. Tall reached out to it, then paused, raising his eyebrows in question. Feeling like a benevolent deity, Sheb nodded his permission to pick up the precious artifact. Tall did so with great care.
Boss, this scum say he needs see you.
Thurg forced his way through the curtains. His huge hands were clamped down on the furry arms of a Moran who didn't struggle at all. He looked around in appreciation.
Nice, very nice,
he said. His gaze fell on Tall. Tall stared at him for a moment, then heaved a sigh. Desh, what are you doing here?
Came to get you.
Well, I'm busy. Still held by the mammoth Gamorrean, the Moran, who apparently knew Tall, and whose name was apparently Desh, actually managed to shrug.
Sorry.
What? Sheb struggled for words, trying to make sense of the absurd situation.
Tall, do you know this...
I do, from way back. He's not supposed to be here yet. Well, I guess what's done is done. Shaking his long, black, dreadlocked hair, Tall gently put the figurine on the table, sliding it a little bit away from him. He rose.
Too bad. I liked the pastries.
He extended a hand in Sheb's direction, then jerked it upward. The merchant let out a treble yelp of astonishment as he found himself squirming in midair. At the same instant, the Moran twisted and brought his arms up, breaking Thurg's grip as if it were nothing at all, then grabbed the Gamorrean's arm and flipped him over.
Blue, I say,
squeaked a panicked Blue, heading for the door with arms raised.
Help! Help!
Four armed bodyguards charged in. The Rodian, huge black eyes fixed on Tall, slammed into the hapless droid. Blue went clattering into a corner, and the Rodian began firing at the interlopers.
No! No blasters!
Sheb shouted, thinking of the irreplaceable items on display in the room. But they ignored him. Red blaster fire screamed through the room, and Sheb, still dangling in the air, screamed along with it. First in pain at seeing his beautiful merchandise obliterated, and then again when a bolt seared through his flapping robes dangerously close to his torso. There were two other lights flashing about as well, about a meter long, one green, one blue, that Tall and the interloper wielded like swords.
Lightsabers! That meant...
Tall kept one hand extended, holding Sheb aloft, and with the other batted back the red bolts with an almost casual ease. Was the man humming?
Yeah!
Cried the Korobar as a blast singed his thigh. Tall winced.
Sorry,
he said, smiling sheepishly up at Sheb, even as he executed a backward flip, ending in a sharp, perfectly placed kick to the midsection of a bodyguard. The Gamorrean stumbled, then toppled as Tall slammed the butt of the lightsaber into his temple. I wasn't done yet, Tall said, directing his attention to Desh. The smaller, more slender Jedi, for such Sheb realized they both had to be, was on the table now. He splayed a four-fingered hand and lifted the Rodian into the air. For an insane second, he and his employer hovered eye to eye, the Rodian's tubular muzzle undulating with protests. And then the green-skinned bodyguard was slammed against the wall.
Well, don't blame the messenger,
the Moran said. He wasn't even breathing hard.
I was told you were to be reassigned.
2 more weeks and I would have gotten the whole operation, Tall grumbled. He, too, was speaking as calmly as if the entire exchange were occurring in his own home, over friendly drinks.
The council couldn't wait that long? It would seem not.
Desh somersaulted from the table to the floor, grabbing two chairs in the process and hurling them at the four-eyed arachnoid Aqualish, firing steadily, though fruitlessly, at Tall. The furniture struck the bodyguard perfectly, and he went sprawling to the floor, limbs entangled in the chair's back and legs at painful-looking angles. His blaster flew out of his hands. The Marand caught it effortlessly. He whistled as he examined it.
Nice!
Oh, no, you don't, Blue, said Tall. The protocol droid had hastened over to one of the fallen bodyguards and clutched a comlink in his hand. Still keeping one hand turned toward Sheb, the Jedi leapt toward the droid and severed Blue's hand from his wrist. The droid gave a high-pitched shriek.
Oh, come on, that can be fixed, Tall said. Don't be a baby. So, did I ruin the whole mission?
Asked Desh. He thumbed his lightsaber, and with a snap hiss, the blade deactivated.
Not the whole mission. Just the really satisfying wrap-up part of it.
Miraculously, the statue of the oceanic creature had survived intact.
Tall picked it up, smiling. But this will do. I got a lot of useful information on a lot of very nasty sorts from this one.
That touchy-feely stuff you do with things does come in handy.
It's called psychometry, thank you very much.
Listening, Sheb realized why Tall, which of course wasn't this Jedi's name at all, had always been so eager to touch everything before purchasing it. Come to think of it, he hadn't purchased much, but he had certainly handled...
Sheb whimpered.
You know everything,
he said, his voice taut.
Well, not everything, said Tall, not Tall. I mean, I don't know every synonym for blue, for example. Blue? How about it?
Oh, dear,
squeaked the droid.
And as for you, Sheb, it's been a pleasure doing business with you. This might hurt a bit, but I'm sure the Jedi who will be here momentarily will take care of you.
Tall lifted his hand, and as the miserable protocol droid began to list the billions of synonyms for his name, Sheb almost thought he would welcome the unconsciousness that was about to claim him, as Tall, looking apologetic, drew back his hand to send the black market merchant hurtling into the wall.
Chapter 3. It was not his birthplace, exactly, but the Jedi Temple was where Quinlan Vos had grown up. He'd raced through its corridors, hidden behind its massive pillars, found peace in its meditation hall, ended and started fights in rooms intended for striking blows, and some that weren't, and sneaked naps in its library. All Jedi came here at some point in their lives. For Quinlan, it always felt like coming home when he ran lightly up the stairs and entered the massive building as he did now. He'd enjoyed taking down Sheb's black market operation back-to-back with his old friend, but that pleasure had been mitigated almost at once when they returned to Desh's ship. On their way back to Coruscant, Desh, whose formal name was Akar Deshu, had soberly briefed him on Dooku's devastating attack on Morani. Vos didn't know what to say to offer comfort. The planet was now controlled by the Separatists, and they had made it clear that all Morans were to be regarded as extremely hostile and killed on sight. A world and its people had fallen in the space of a few hours.
Obi-Wan Kenobi's normally modulated voice had had a slight edge of urgency to it when Vos and Desh had reported in, and it was that more than the cryptic words that made Vos decide to forego anything resembling formal attire. Well, anything resembling appropriate attire, if he was being honest. After the refreshing scuffle, both his clothes and he could have used a good washing, but he figured there would be a chance to clean up once he'd pinned down Obi-Wan and found out what the hell was going on. Everyone knew him here, even now, when he was often away for months, sometimes even a year at a stretch. Vos grinned happily at seeing familiar faces and exchanged so many hugs, claps on the back, and handshakes that he was concerned he might be...
Late, as usual, said Kenobi, in his usual put-upon tone.
Voss glanced back up and smirked, used the force to leap a dozen stairs, and landed gracefully before the Jedi Master.
Nice to see you too, Obi-Wan. I'm sure you've missed me.
Not terribly, Kenobi said, but he smiled as he said it. I do not recall our last adventure with particular fondness. Unfortunately, I don't think this next assignment will be nearly so pleasant, though I hope it's more successful. The two Jedi Masters had last been paired together to track down an escaped hut named Zero. Unfortunately, someone had beaten them to the hut, with fatal results for the unpleasant Zero. Obi-Wan, as befitted a Jedi, was adept at concealing his feelings in the Force when he chose to, but now he did not, and even a non-Force-sensitive could have seen the concern in his gray-blue eyes.
"This isn't going to be good, is it?"
Voss asked quietly.
"No, old friend," Kenobi said with a sigh. "It's quite far from good, actually."
"I'm listening."
Kenobi shook his head.
"No, I think I'll let the Council explain everything as they see fit."
Volumes were spoken in Kenobi's demeanor and word choice, and Voss didn't pry further.
He had a bad feeling about this.
Kenobi found the hologram no easier to watch a second time. He instead concentrated on how Voss reacted. The other Jedi seldom opted to conceal his emotions, though he could when needed, and pain was in Voss's dark brown eyes as the tragedy unfolded. And as before, there was silence when the hologram finished. Voss exhaled and pressed his lips together.
"Desh told me about the attack, but I had no idea this was why you asked me to come here. What does the Council wish of me?"
"A course of action that we reluctantly deemed necessary," said Mace.
Voss's gaze flickered to Yoda, doubtless curious as to why Windu spoke instead of the head of the Council.
"There's no way to phrase this other than bluntly. Master Voss, the Council wants you to assassinate Count Dooku."
For perhaps the first time since Kenobi had known Voss, the other Jedi was at an utter loss for words. He stared first at Windu, then at Yoda, then finally at Kenobi. He opened his mouth, possibly to protest or demand an explanation, then fell silent for a moment. When he spoke, he said quietly,
"I think I understand, but how do you propose I do this?"
"Get close to him, you will,"
said Yoda.
"Close enough to kill him? How am I supposed to manage that? I can't just walk into his palace."
"You have served the Republic well in previous undercover missions," Windu said.
"Well, sure. I've stopped some black market shipments and blasted a few smugglers. But this, it's not a one-man job."
"Correct, Master Voss is."
Kenobi raised an auburn eyebrow. The plan had been for this to be a solo endeavor, but Yoda looked tranquil as he spoke, as if they'd intended this all along.
"Go alone, you will not. More than one it will take to kill Dooku."
"Master Yoda, I volunteered to assist Master Voss," Anakin said at once.
Before Kenobi could protest, he well knew that putting Anakin and Quinlan together on a mission was simply asking for trouble. Yoda shook his own head.
"One there is who has tried and failed. Yet closer has she come than any other to killing Count Dooku."
Now it was Kenobi's turn to stare at the wizened Council leader.
"You can't possibly mean Ventress."
"Ventress?"
Voss echoed.
"Not Dooku's apprentice, Ventress. The one who's been a thorn in our side for years?"
Yoda nodded serenely.
Asajj Ventress had indeed once been Count Dooku's Sith apprentice and pet assassin.
Kenobi and Anakin had crossed lightsabers with her on more than one occasion. Tall, lithe, exceptionally skilled in the Force, the former Night Sister was a formidable foe. But if anyone hated Dooku, it was her. Ventress's former master had tried to kill her. Rumor had it she'd attempted to return the favor more than once. Wait, wait. I can't have heard this right, Voss said. The Jedi Council wants me to work with a Sith?
Kenobi shifted uneasily in his chair. Ludicrous as the idea sounded, when one set aside its very unexpectedness, it actually made a great deal of sense.
Failed, Sith, Kenobi corrected. I wouldn't go so far as to call her trustworthy, but it's true that our desires do align on this one point, and no one knows him as well as she does. I must concur with Master Yoda. Asajj Ventress would be a tremendous resource, and one that could prove vital to the success of this mission.
Failed is an interesting choice of words, considering Ventress has failed at more than being the perfect Sith,
Windu snapped. He seemed surprised at Kenobi's words.
She's attempted to kill Dooku repeatedly, and obviously not succeeded.
She acted alone before, Kenobi said. He turned to Voss.
This time, she won't be. She'll have you. Voss's furrowed brow smoothed out, and his dark eyes crinkled with their customary mischief above the yellow tattoo that crossed his face.
Didn't know you were such a romantic, Kenobi.
Sure you won't be jealous? Turning more serious, he asked, How much help could she be?
She hasn't been around Dooku for a while now. Why would she want to work with us anyway? She won't be eager to help Jedi.
The same man our enemy is,
Yoda said.
Aid us, she can. Although she must not know she does so. His personality, his way of thinking, the places he knows and retreats to. Knows all this, Ventress does.
He leaned forward, peering at Voss from eyes huge beneath his deeply wrinkled brow.
Ignorant of your pursuit, your quarry must be, of course. But ignorant also of her aid must Asajj Ventress be.
This is getting too complicated, Voss said. Maybe this is a one-man job. No disrespect. But if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it on my own. Clean and simple. She'll just get in the way.
Yoda's face relaxed into a combination of gentleness and implacability.
Always know you to walk alone, the Council does. Underestimate Ventress, you do. Skilled she is. Her help you must take, or fail, you will.
Kenobi felt a not unpleasant chill as Yoda uttered the words. He knew what that meant. Few were stronger in the Force than Yoda, and while the diminutive green-skinned master was always humble and cautioned that one could never predict the ever-changing future with complete accuracy, there were some things that he simply knew to be the right path. This was one of them. The rippling in the Force told Kenobi that his fellow council members, all of whom were familiar with Yoda's unique insight, had sensed this as well. Picking up on the energetic shift in the room, Voss sighed.
All right, I accept the mission. I'll find Ventress and get her cooperation, somehow. And I will assassinate Count Dooku. But I can't promise that Ventress will survive this any more than Dooku will once I'm through with him.
See all ends. You cannot, young one.
I can see the end of this session, Master Yoda, Voss said. And it ends with me bowing, getting a shower and a meal, and likely getting more details from, I'm guessing, Master Kenobi.
Some frowned at Voss's impertinence, but Yoda's green-gold eyes were warm with amusement.
Correct you are, on all counts. Even the right order have you determined.
He sobered.
Cheers the spirit, humor does. Even at the darkest times. Yet grave this task is, and fraught with peril. May the Force be with you, Quinlan Voss.
The shower was welcome. The meal in the group dining hall even more so. All Jedi Padawans began their training at young ages, with little or no recollection of their families. Voss, brought to the temple even younger than most, felt that he had hundreds of brothers and sisters, and it seemed that whenever he went into the dining hall, he ran into at least half of them.
It was wonderful. Popularity, adulation. A Jedi, as Yoda might have said, craved not those things. Nor did Voss, really. But it made him happy to see his companions, to meet the overly solemn Padawans and squirmy puppy younglings. And it was with reluctance that he left to go on his next assignment. He often thought that it was his ability to enjoy wherever he was and the company of whomever he was with that made him, perhaps ironically, so successful in jobs that took him to the worst places and saw him in the company of the worst people. But Quinlan Voss had always ventured into stuffy, closed rooms, darkened alleys, and isolated outposts alone. No one else to keep track of, to be beholden to, or to worry about. Once you realized that everyone with whom you associated was potentially happy to literally stab you in the back, all the wondering just went away. Simple, clean, uncomplicated. From everything he'd heard, Asajj Ventress was about as complicated as anyone could get. Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Yoda had all gone toe-to-toe with her. There was clearly something about the woman that, on some level, they respected.
"Well, you're here long enough to shower and eat,"
Desh said as he plopped a tray down and sat across from Voss. "Maybe even sleep," Voss said, smiling as he sliced open a white-striped purple Jogan fruit.
"Such luxury."
Desh winked and dived into a generous slice of steak.
"Don't get used to it."
"I never do," said Voss.
"Don't suppose you can talk about it?"
"Can I ever?"
Desh thought about it, chewing, then shook his head.
"Usually not. But there's something about it that concerns you."
"The perils of old friends," Voss said with a sigh. "Well, I'm to have a partner."
"I know you prefer to work alone, but yet I often work in pairs,"
Desh replied.
"That's just it. She's not a Jedi. And she's not even supposed to know that I'm one. Plus," Voss added, "this mission we're supposed to undertake together, it's extremely delicate and dangerous. I don't like wondering if my partner's more dangerous than the actual target."
"Well,"
Desh said,
"the temple can't prepare us for everything. That's part of the fun."
"And in what area is the temple failing you at this moment, Master Voss?"
was Kenobi, smiling pleasantly as he joined them.
"You know, I'm glad you asked," Voss said.
"Oh, dear,"
Kenobi sighed.
"I know how to work with my fellow Jedi and with civilians," Voss said. "I know how to deal with underworld scum and their hangers-on. But you know and I know that this partner is unique. And I need to know what sort of interaction she's going to expect."
"Ah," said Kenobi. "Desh, can you excuse us? Voss will need to depart from his mission early tomorrow. And there are some..."
He hesitated.
"Things he should know about it."
"Of course, Master Kenobi,"
Desh said.
"Later, Voss."
He picked up his tray and left them to it. Kenobi turned to Voss.
"Rather like you, Ventress appears to work alone."
"Frankly, we don't know how she'll react," Kenobi said. "But there are a few things about her personality I've learned. She's driven, focused, and hates Dooku. Once you've gained her trust and she sees a real chance at killing her former master, I think you'll be able to depend on her completely."
"Well, that's good. But how do I get to that part?"
"Asajj Ventress is highly intelligent and doesn't suffer fools gladly. Skill and competence impress her."
Kenobi hesitated.
"She's also a very striking woman. Physically. It might tip her off if you, don't notice her. And she likes to trade barbs."
Voss snagged a fried kajaka root from Obi-Wan's plate and popped it into his mouth.
"You were fighting her and chatting at the same time?"
Kenobi nodded.
"It's..." He searched for the word. "Banter."
"You flirted with her?"
"Come now, Voss. You can't tell me you managed to go undercover in all sorts of shady places without flirting yourself." "With Ventress, it's a power play. A way for her to exert control.
It will serve you best if you engage in it with her. Boss tapped his chest.
Jedi? He said exaggeratedly. No attachments, remember?
How far is too far? Be a little rough around the edges. Leer a bit. She'll make it plain enough she's not interested, and take satisfaction in telling you so. She'll see it as a win.
Voss sighed.
I think, he said, taking another one of Kenobi's fried root strips, killing Dooku is going to be the easy part.
Kenobi did not contradict him.
Chapter 4 Level 1313 was so named because it was 1,313 levels from the core of the planet.
Voss suspected it was easier to think of it that way, rather than focusing on the weight of almost 4,000 other levels between oneself and the surface.
The difference between Coruscant's literal and figurative underworld and the one that saw the sun was sufficiently stark that they might as well be located in two different systems.
Crimes that would be viewed as appalling above were everyday occurrences here. The Jedi wondered, not for the first time, how many would be born, live, and die here, never having glimpsed the sun, let alone the stars. He strode past shivering figures with hands outstretched to small fires burning in metal drums. Voices called out to him.
Please, sir, got anything to eat? Or some credits to spare?
Hey, handsome. I know what you want.
Right this way. We've got what you're looking for. Exotic items from across the galaxy.
With a gentle brush of the Force, a flick of a finger, and a non-committal smile, Voss caused each inquirer to forget they had seen him, focusing on his goal, a bar that looked, well, pretty much like every other bar Voss had patronized in the last few years.
He loved this part of a mission. When anything and everything could happen. When it was all new and exciting,
and hadn't yet devolved into something dirty, complicated, and usually far too banal.
The door hissed open to admit him, though the air was hazy with the smoke of various substances being burned.
Voss could nonetheless make out the forms of females of various species gyrating to the thump of loud, primal music.
Quickly, he scanned the place, looking for the individuals he had come to find.
One, a green-skinned reptilian Trandoshan, dressed in a yellow flight suit, sat at the bar.
Voss spotted the others, nestled farther in the darker corners of the establishment, but they would come later. Most of the patrons were huddled deep in conversation, but there was an empty space near the Trandoshan.
Voss strode up, getting the server droid's attention, and gesturing to what appeared to be the drink of choice for the establishment, said cheerily to no one in particular,
"Hey, how's it going?"
A couple of the patrons gave him sidelong glances, but no one replied. Undaunted, Voss took a seat, nodding to the droid who slid a cup filled with something thick and dark in his direction, and continued,
"You gentlemen have any leads on any jobs?"
The Trandoshan, Bosk, Voss recalled, known for hunting Wookiees with a viciousness and thoroughness that surpassed even that of most Trandoshans, member of the Bounty Hunters Guild, hissed in either amusement or annoyance, or perhaps both.
"This ain't no hospitality service, buddy. You're either in the know or you ain't. And clearly, you ain't."
With this pithy comment, he turned back to his drink, clearly feeling he had said all that needed to be said.
Voss gave it a beat,
knocked back his drink as if he welcomed the horrible acidic taste, then said casually,
"I guess the bald banshee is stealing everybody's gigs these days."
The constant murmur of voices and the clanking of ceramicware and cutlery paused among those within earshot.
Voss turned to regard Voss again, stared at him stonily for a moment, then laughed.
"That woman is trouble."
He clapped Voss on the shoulder with a three-fingered clawed hand and gestured at the server droid.
"Give my new friend another one of whatever he's drinking. On me."
Voss nodded his thanks.
"So, She stole a job from you, huh?
Instead of answering directly, Voss inquired,
Where is she these days?
The Trandoshan's eyes narrowed slightly.
No idea.